You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
take a look at yourself, yeah. Get some people.
Where do you want to be?
Where you want to be?
What your life is.
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Get some people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math,
this call is being recorded.
Music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Peace, family. Sometimes I say peace. Sometimes I say hotel. Might say, what's up, family? But I'm definitely talking to the family. I'm talking to us. And I'm trying to get us to work on changing our minds so we can trust one another, love one another, respect one another, work with one another, build with one another. And it's difficult. It seems easy. Because all you got to do is focus and concentrate and change your mind. I mean, you know, I'm not really anything special. You know, people argue, yeah, you should say you're special. You should feel good. And I do. But I recognize I have a love and appreciation of Africa and Africans. And so I try my best when I see particular words and I think about them, particularly in this society, how this society manipulates and utilizes that manipulation to work on the psyche and the minds of our people. So that's why I don't, in the libation, you heard me say, we shouldn't call ourselves slaves. And my good friend, Brother LaRue Ned, in his book, Why We Shouldn't Call Our Ancestors Slaves, is spot on. We shouldn't, because we were not slaves. We're captives. And so if we started to say that as a group of people, imagine. But not just that word. If we wouldn't say that we're black, but we'll say we're African, we claim our Africanness, as Marimba on her answering machine says, the most revolutionary thing at this moment is to say, is to be African is the most revolutionary thing at this time. You know, Dr. Asa Hilliard, Baba Asa said, to be, you know, just like that question of Shakespearean, to be African or not to be. And that is the question for us. And so I will never stop what I'm doing. Every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, that's what I'm going to be doing. Trying to put something on our mind, to speak from this platform, from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. The program truly is unapologetically African. Hope you have a great weekend planned. Today is Friday, TGIF Friday, TGI Friday. And so I have a great weekend planned. I hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, need to do, should do, must do, can do, will do, and hope that the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But if it isn't, you're going to get it done anyway. I know you. That's right. You're going to get it done anyway. So just do it. Don't put off. Don't procrastinate. Just do it. This is African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to us live, my good friend and brother is setting up the archives, Brother Kwaku, the archives on timeforanawakening.com. You go to timeforanawakening.com, look for the red, black, and green lion with Africa imposed. programs are dated and titled. More will be coming on that platform, which is great. So, but of the programs that we have on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, right after my program, not right after, but a little bit after my program, all times are going to give are Eastern times. Acres of Diamonds, Mondays, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern. Acres of Diamonds, public affairs programming from Philadelphia. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Let's Buy Black 365. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. On Wednesdays, Revive with Sister PLC, Revive from 8 to 10. Today is Friday, and if it's 8 p.m. Eastern time on this day, it is time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Check them out tonight at 8 p.m. Tomorrow, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Also tomorrow, Dr. Rogers' program on Blog Talk Radio. Dr. Rogers' program on Blog Talk Radio tomorrow. And his time frame is 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays. And the number to call is 646-668-8410. 646-668-8410. And usually Dr. Rogers' program, Black Reality Think Tank, some young sisters are holding it down, and they do an outstanding job. They do an outstanding job. So that's today. Excuse me, that's tomorrow. That's tomorrow. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. No, it's not me. It is Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness, and her program, Revive. The same time slot, but different program on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And that's the number to call to give your questions, comments, or concerns, or just to give us your African perspective. Also, last night, Us Lifting Us on Blog Talk Radio, 929-477-2789. Brother Shabaka was the host, and Sister Nanana was the guest, and they did an outstanding job. That's Thursday, 9 p.m. on Thursday. Every Thursday, 9 p.m., Us Lifting Us. I'll talk more about Us Lifting Us in a second. But also, too, today, Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness every Friday from 4 to 6 Eastern Time with my friend, Brother Yosef Muhammad. 563-999-3089, 563-999-3089, my good brother, Brother Yosef Muhammad, in Disaster Awareness for Community Preparedness. We Buy Black, WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Check them out. They have a kiosk in the Greenbrier Mall here in Atlanta. So if you're in the Atlanta area, go to the Greenbrier Mall. You can pick up products and goods and services that are produced by us. Laundry detergent, deodorant, liniment for your aching muscles, batteries, toothpaste, toothbrushes, razors, I don't know, all kinds of good stuff. But the important thing is, it is produced by us, sold by us, for us. We got to support that. Just like I talk about Us Lifting Us, brothers and sisters, the most important thing that we can do is to begin to develop the consciousness of closing ranks, pulling our resources, and doing for ourselves. We Buy Black Convention this month, a couple of weeks, November 16th through the 17th, Saturday and Sunday, excuse me, Friday and Saturday at the Cobb Galleria Mall. Go to WeBuyBlack.com for more information on that. I'm going to give Brother Tayembe out a shout out right now because his thing is coming up also November 16th through the 26th, a 10-day trip. less than $3,000. The number to call is 404-931-9429, 404-931-2429. Talk to Brother Bomani Tayembe about going to Africa, about going to Ghana. You arrive from New York to Accra, Ghana. Spend 3 days in Accra. Then you'll go to Kumasi, where the Ashanti King presides. 3 days in Kumasi, and all of the artwork and stuff that they do in Kumasi. Beautiful work. 3 days in Cape Coast, Cape Coast Dungeon. You'll probably check out my good friend and sister Amakus and One Africa. She is situated right between the two dungeons, Cape Coast Dungeon and Elmina Dungeon. So check them out. If you and go to his website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see pictures, go to Facebook.com/Bomani, B-O-M-A-N-I, B-O-M-A-N-I. And if you want to see video, go to YouTube.com/Bomani 2007. Books. Better is a book than a memorial plaque in the temple. Better is a book because what is written is for eternity. We are still reading what we wrote thousands of years ago. What is written is still being read from hundreds of years ago today. Better is a book. These cultural bookstores, cultural centers and bookstores, one is the Shrine of the Black Madonna, located 946 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, phone number 404-549-8676, 404-549-8676, and it's in the West End area of Atlanta. They have not just books, they got furniture, they got clothing, they got the red, black, and green shoes. They have what you need, and if they don't have it, they'll get it. Also to Medu Nature Bookstore or Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. And of course, my good brother, Brother Jamu, with his bookstore in Lithonia, Black Dot, the cultural center and bookstore, Black Dot. The number 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. And of course, there is light in the Black Dot. Ulu. Us Lifting Us. I mentioned their radio broadcast every Thursday of Us Lifting Us at 9 p.m. Check them out. You can also go online. Go to usliftingus.com. Become a member. Become a contributing member by getting a share. You know, be serious. This is, if we do not control the economics of our community, I know this is very difficult for us to comprehend and grasp because we are in America. America's about individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. That's America for you. But we pulled our money together and we opened up a cafe, Cafe Ulu in Atlanta. Cafe Ulu's 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza. 2036 Sylvan Road in Atlanta. And we specialize in coffee. That's right. We're going to be known for coffee. We got African coffee, Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia. We got Brazilian. We got Panamanian. We got all varieties of coffee. My brother Ken, who's our manager, he buys different types of coffee. So, I mean, at one time when I was working there at the cafe, we had Papua New Guinea, very strong. So Cafe Ulu, check them out on the website, cafeulu.com, cafeulu.com. Also, we sell the vitality drink, Ambrosia, the drink of the gods. They say the food of the gods, but it's the drink of the gods, Ambrosia, my good brother Novak Young. And you can go online to check Ambrosia and the ingredients in it and the benefits for it. Online at CompleteOneBeauty.com. CompleteOneBeauty.com. And Chemetamorphosis. The Chemetamorphosis Conference is December 8th, 7, 8, and 9. December 7th to the 9th, the weekend of that weekend in D.C. at the Union Temple Baptist Church and at the Thurgood Marshall Center in D.C. And the conference celebrates the 10th year anniversary of the ASA Restoration Project, the first American African funded archaeological excavation in Kemet by my good brother, Tony Broder. Tony Broder. So check them out. Please do so. Go online. Kemet Morphosis Conference in Washington, D.C. He's been here the last couple of, he was here last weekend, last Thursday, his presentation on a comparison of Kemet with and the symbolism of Black Panther was outstanding. Outstanding. And then the 2 weeks prior to that, he did a PowerPoint on the restoration of the 25th dynasty, Nubian dynasty temple in the Valley of the Kings, Valley of the Kings and Queens. Outstanding. And he says it's going to be ready for you in 2023. It's going to be a big celebration. He already has Earth, Wind, and Fire lined up. One of his favorite groups, he says. So support that. A lot of things happening. A lot of things going on. I'm going to, one of the things I'm going to do today is read from the Arrow. You know I love the Arrow, the newsletter out of San Antonio, Texas, chock full of good information. And, of course, the narrative that on the front page is Babu Phil Johnson, who is an ancestor now, has been an ancestor for a few years, but the brothers and sisters in San Antonio, because what Baba did or what Babu Phil Johnson did was create an institution. When you create an institution, even though you started it, but many others recognize your vision and understood where you were coming from, that even though you pass on, it sustains. In fact, sometimes it even grows. And that's the kind of situation that we need to have for African liberation. That's why when we have a movement, the movement is not an individual. The movement is the program. The movement is the program itself. Somebody gets bumped off, you turn the page and you continue on with the program. And the ultimate program, and what is ultimate means, is sovereignty for African people. That's bottom line. The program is not integration. The program is not assimilation. The program is not going along to get along. The program is African sovereignty. African sovereignty. That's the program. And so when they bump somebody off, we just turn the page and keep on stepping, because that is the ultimate goal for African people. And, you know, I tell you, to me, what should be happening for us, and I wish I had the finances and the wherewithal to do it, because what should be happening for us is that we begin to educate ourselves, like what Baba Baruti has been saying, educate ourselves and educate our children and even adults and so forth. And so we'll be in that framework of nation building, independent of what these Caucasians have done. We'll work towards that. That's what we must do. That's what we must do. Let me throw this out there very quickly. I mentioned before, I think the other day, about the election of Bolsonaro in Brazil. I just want to say I'm very concerned because of his rhetoric, but even more so now that he is the president of Brazil, of what he'll actually do. Because the reality is, he has said things just like Trump has said things. And one of the things that you must, what they say, it's not just empty rhetoric. What they say is what they want to do. This is what they want to do. because there are so many Africans. There are more Africans in Brazil, in any country around the world, except Nigeria. And I mentioned before, I mentioned that some argue about India, but I'll just save that. But I'm just dealing with Brazil and the amount of Africans that are in Brazil and the fact that we don't run nothing. When I went to Brazil, which is probably now about 10 years ago, maybe even a little bit more probably. Yes, they are more because it was before 2006. And when I went to Brazil, hell, we weren't the sky cabs at the airport. We were not waiters and waitresses in some hotels, particularly on Copacabana. Man, I had a hard time saying that today. Copacabana. And the restaurants that were there and so forth, nah. Bellhops, nah. The only thing that we're out is just on the streets trying to do whatever we can. Even though prostitution is illegal in Brazil, but because of poverty, poverty and corruption makes a prostitute out of everybody. Poverty and corruption. And the reality that is going to be heaped upon the Brazilian people and all those Caucasian Brazilians, as opposed to the African, Brazilian Africans who did not vote for this man, will suffer consequences. They are going to be killed based upon what this man is saying. Jair Bolsonaro has already hinted that affirmative action is in the crosshairs. Brazil's new racist president has an anti-African agenda. Far-right candidate, no longer a candidate, Jair Bolsonaro, who was once on trial for racism, won Brazil's presidency, clearing the way for him to pursue his unabashedly racist agenda. Bolsonaro won by 55% of the vote over his progressive opponent. The former Brazilian congressman rode a wave of fear. That's what Trump did, didn't he? He's still doing it. Fear. Over his country's economy downturn and a promise to put an end to a series of scandals involving government officials. He pledges unity, austerity, and growth. Yeah, sure. His supporters dismiss concerns about Bolsonaro's long history of making hateful comments about women, the LGBT community, and Brazilian Africans. In April, Brazil's attorney general charged him with inciting hatred and discrimination. In one instance, Bolsonaro insulted African descendants of rebel Africans called Quilombos and expressed regret about their legal protection. However, a court dismissed the lawsuit during his presidential campaign in September, just like anything that came upon Trump. And that's why he got Kavanaugh in the Supreme Court, because Kavanaugh believes that a president should not be indicted. A president should not, no matter how bad he is. Bolsonaro has already hinted at being one of his policy targets, Brazil's affirmative action program. What debt of slavery? I never enslaved anyone in my life. Look, if you really look at history, the Portuguese didn't even step foot in Africa. The blacks themselves turned over the slaves. This is what he said in a TV interview in July. So we owe all of these Africans that are here, we owe them nothing. I think I mentioned last week that Brazil just started an affirmative action program just about a decade ago, trying to be more inclusive, open up the universities so young brothers and sisters, you know. But also I played a piece. I need to go get that piece because I played a piece about what Brazil shows the world. They show the world there are no Africans. just like other countries that have dark-skinned people, especially Southeast Asian countries. What they show the world is what is light, bright, and damn near white. They don't want nothing dark. And in Brazil, particularly, because even though prostitution is illegal, but there are these places called Timors, which are hoe houses. How about that word? Brothels, if you want to use that one. And most of the women are light-skinned. The dark-skinned women are on the streets hustling. Ah, but those beautiful dark-skinned samba queens, when carnival rolls around, they're up and out front. They're up and out front. They hate us because they ain't us. They hate us because they ain't us. Brazil lawmakers were reluctant to go down that path, partly because they had long promoted the idea that racism does not exist in the country, which civil rights activists have exposed as a myth. Wherever you have Caucasians and us in proximity, there will be European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. You're going to have it. Because they have put into their minds that they are superior. And there's nothing we can do or say that will change that mindset. They suffer from cognitive dissonance and fragility, Caucasian European fragility. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear about the evil that they have done. And how the world is made. They think it's by divine right. They think they just did this because God ordained this. Slavery was massive. Captivity was massive in Latin America's largest nation. An estimated 5.5 million Africans were brought to Brazil, compared with half a million transported to America. Foreign policy study said. Today, Brazilian Africans and those of mixed race constitute 76% of the bottom one-tenth income earners and receive the poorest quality education in the country. Brazil parallels the U.S. Brazil's parallels with the U.S. are striking. American Africans own approximately less than one-tenth of the wealth of Caucasian America, according to the Center for American Progress. That was released in February. President Trump, like his Brazilian counterpart, has a long racist history and admires dictators. The two leaders have an affection for each other, an affinity for each other. Had a very good conversation with the newly elected president of Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, who won his race by a substantial margin. He agrees that Brazil and the United States will work closely together on trade, military, and everything else. Excellent call. Wish him congrats. Trump. Progressive former presidents include Luiz Lula da Silva, I remember her, Dilma Rousseff, I can't remember the last name, but promoted university quotas for poor and people of color. Each major changes under Bolsonaro, who has called quotas unfair. I can't say that I'll end them because it depends on Congress. At least decrease the percentage, he said. That's what I'll do. Affirmative action could be just the first of many policies that will harm the African community of Brazil. Yeah. I feel for my brothers. I'm going to always keep track with that. We'll continue to look at that because that deserves to be looked at. I know you agree. One thing I've been talking about, of course, is climate change. And how serious I think climate change is, you know. And a lot of good information has been coming out on it. I don't know about you, but because of the selfish and greedy nature of capitalism and these Europeans, they are the ones who have exacerbated climate change. They are the ones, if they would have heeded the words 30 years ago, this wouldn't be an issue. And even today, they don't have the will to do this, but even today, car manufacturers and everybody else should say, we're not making cars where gasoline is needed anymore. We're changing them right now because we understand that the burning of fossil fuels, which of course is oil, which of course gas comes from, and which of course emits into the air, we're not doing that. We're making electric, solar, or whatever. We're changing, which would cost huge amounts of money. But what is it? Do you not want to make that sacrifice for the future of humanity? Or are you so damn short-sighted that all you care about is these profits and not believe in the coming, even though you have seen, you can look globally at what's happening. You see what's happening. The overwhelming hugeness of climate change. This article was written by Casey Williams. Casey Williams is a new North Carolina based freelance writer on climate, environment, and political labor political issues. And let's get off into this before we go to the break. Within 30 years, parts of Miami will be underwater. The coral reefs will be mostly dead. Swaths of West Africa will dry up and become infertile. That's where I'm moving to, West Africa. I'm moving to Ghana. In a few years, I ain't going tomorrow, but believe me, you know, if I'm on this radio talking about get out, you know, I believe in doing what I say to do. You know, it ain't like do as I say, not as I do. No, I'm asking our people, because on the continent is the only place where we truly can be sovereign. I love the Republic of New Africa. I love other organizations that want to try to do something here. But the reality is we must face, we are in the midst of an open, ugly, sworn enemy. And if Trump does not show us that, damn it, I don't know what will. Look at the proliferation of incidents. Even had Don Lemon saying, white men are the call. White men are the, I've been saying that a long time. Such predictions of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, whose most recent report details with horrifying precision what's likely to happen if we keep burning planet-warming fossil fuels. Without unprecedented changes in all aspects of society, let me repeat that, without unprecedented changes in all aspects of society, report reads, the planet is on track to warm between 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, thus thrusting us into a hotter, more dangerous, and less predictable world within several decades. Already in 2018, two major hurricanes have rocked the United States and a typhoon left 127 dead in the Philippines. Disasters like these, which most likely will hurt people with lack of health and political power, are going to get worse. Yes, as the planet heats up, the government remains frozen. And America's rise in oil-hungry society are struggling to kick their fossil fuel habit. While there's been much effort to green individual behavior, experts say rousing people to slash emissions is more complicated than it seems. Waging a personal war of attrition against emissions, like ditching beef or installing energy-efficient bulbs, can feel like important changes because they involve actions that sit within the narrow band of individual power. In the supermarket or at home, you're the boss. You buy tempura or unplug your toaster. You have yet even the most optimistic studies, repeat, even the most optimistic studies suggest that if every person on Earth switched to a plant-based diet, it would reduce agricultural emissions, which is huge. These big agro farms pushing and promoting beef, which account for a quarter of global greenhouse gases emissions. It counts for 25% by 20 to 70%. That's a lot, but not enough. That's a lot, but not enough. At this point, to believe changing consumer habits alone will solve the problem isn't just unrealistic, it's delusional, and it's also paralyzing. The whole cultural focusing, the whole culture focusing exclusively on discrete actions and solutions is a strategy for dealing with feeling powerless, says Renee Lutzman, an environmental psychologist and author of Environmental Melancholia. It creates a solution-based culture that actively works to discourage having other kinds of conversations and mounts to a kind of disavowing and avoidance of the harder questions. Like your head is in the damn sand. You can dutifully shrink your carbon footprint, and you should, she adds. But for climate realists, there's only one way to put the brakes on climate catastrophe. Stop using fossil fuels. Now, damn it, I'm a hypocrite, and we all are, because I'm saying that, but I got to get in my car and get around, you know. So, you know, one of the things is not to be a hypocrite. I need to go, just go buy it. I don't want to go buy a car, but go buy a car that is electric or a hybrid, something that begins to change that. Stop using fossil fuels everywhere, forever. This means decarbonizing the global economy within 30 years. We're almost at 2020, so he's talking about 2050. By 2050. According to Salome Hugh, director of the International Center for Climate Change and Development in Bangladesh, we need transformation of the global energy system, Hugh said. A former IPCC, which is the Intergovernmental, you know, on climate change. He's the author and said, while consumer choices are important, the changes required to keeping warming below 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit will be extremely drastic and are not going to come from individual behavior change. It can't come. I mean, whether we has us, it also must involve industry. You just mentioned that the agro industry, particularly farming, is an issue. Global markets and national policies will have to shift as well. 100 companies, nearly all of them oil and gas firms, are responsible for more than 70% of carbon emissions. Investors are starting to see fossil fuels as a bad bet. But policing companies and the markets has to come from governments, and those have to respond to the desires of the people. For him, this means people across the globe have to come together to demand total decarbonization through measures like fossil fuel divestment and push aggressively for policies to commit this goal. I mean, like myself, I thought about, you know, that it becomes so real across the globe that countries pull their resources and say, let's stop this. Let's stop using fossil fuels. Let's begin right now. You're not going to produce a car, not one more damn car that uses gas. Not one more. None of them. Not one car at this moment that uses gasoline, whether it's diesel, any other grade. Right now. I know. It ain't happening, is it? No. Of course, organizing to change corporate behavior and national policy is perhaps more difficult than it's ever been. Decades of neoliberal economic reforms have not only redistributed tremendous power and wealth to corporations, but they've also chipped away at people's sense of collective agency. In countries like the United States, with weak public institutions and governments awash in private money, making greener consumption choices can seem likely the only response to environmental decline. We have to entirely reframe our response to what's going on, Lutzman said. Changing consumer behavior is important, but the point is to focus not just on behavior, but on what underlies it. meaning, values, the systems we're embedded in. Seeing personal behavior as a silver bullet ignores another brutal fact. Whether we decarbonize or not, the future will be profoundly different, and many people will lose their way of life they've come to expect and feel they deserve. We as human beings, you know, I know that within nature, in that cycle, there are those who are preyed upon and those who are predators. And some can argue that that keeps a balance. But as human beings, that's not the case. That should never be the case. As human beings, we should recognize the humanity in each other and be willing to sit at the table of brotherhood and sisterhood and work out all problems regardless of where we are as human beings. The other night I was listening to public radio and they talked about the 1%, the 1% of those billionaires, and most of them are here in the United States. United States have more billionaires than any other country, which is logically so, because the United States is the bastion of capitalism. The bastion. And the wealth that they have is just so damn ridiculous. It's just pathetic. It's sickening. So, and what they'll do, of course, is their objective is get more and more. It may come to a point like those apocalyptic movies that they show and those video games that they have about a world that is just evil and dark and sinister and monsters and mutants. And the problem of climate change and the many human catastrophes it causes is not just a global economy's reliance on fossil fuels for energy. It is also the centrality of these fuels to the global market system and lifestyles it supports. Whether you live in the suburbs and drive to or rely on Amazon for the next day deliveries, fossil fuels have lurched into every aspect of modern life, formed our sense of what it means to be well-lived, and consistent our abilities and constraints our abilities to imagine new ways of living. They constrain our ability to imagine new ways of living. Solving the highly complex problem of climate change requires completely rethinking the way we live and advocating for a world that doesn't rely on unsustainable exploitation of nature and humans. At the personal level, this means participating in collective projects that guide local, national, and international policy towards decarbonization. I repeat, total decarbonization. The divestment movement on college campuses, the Standing Rock encampment, and the People's Climate March are all examples of people taking action to wean the world off fossil fuels and imagine more just ways of organizing society. The enthusiasm is trickling up. Young candidates like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the sister that won in New York, and Abdul El-Sid have backed proposals for a Green New Deal. They back proposals for a Green New Deal that will return energy production to public control, build clean transportation infrastructures, enact a green jobs guarantee, ban new oil and natural gas exploration, end fossil fuel subsidies, cut fossil fuel use to zero within 3 decades. Such proposals are ambitious, but they begin from a realistic assessment of what full decarbonization would actually take. If done successfully, changes in policy can make changes in personal behavior easier to pull off. As a reporter, Martin Lucas wrote in The Guardian, "Everyone has to make choices to live more sustainably. But individual choices must count when the economic system can provide viable environmental options for everyone, not just for the affluent or the intrepid few." The IPCC's latest predictions are dire, but they're less a cry for despair than a call to take realistic look at what climate change actually means. The point about dire predictions is that they are predictions with the explicit caveat that if we take action, then these need not happen. Not all actions are created equal, though. Those that seem most doable can be the least realistically and reflect a wishful thinking of climate change era. Maybe it won't be as bad as they say. Maybe the world as we know it can endure. It can't. It can't, family. But that's what they want. That's what they want to believe. Maybe it won't be as bad as they say. I'll continue to do what we've been doing. I'll go on as business as usual because maybe the world as we know it can't endure this. You know, maybe some, no, no. The signs are already there. It is happening. But yet, we want to, you know, put our faces in the sand. We don't want to believe that climate change is real. And in the midst of all the other things that are happening, it's crazy. It's a crazy world. Yeah. We're going to take a break. Monday's program. Monday, I'm going to have a sister speak. I'm going to have a panel of sisters. And they will talk about the issues of the day from an African perspective. And we'll have sisters. I know a few sisters call on the program periodically that listen to the program. Thank them for that. But I'm going to have a panel of sisters and probably work something out like that, do it more often, because we need to hear our sisters. They sacrifice so much. In fact, without them, we wouldn't be. And we need to respect and honor our sisters. So we'll I'm looking forward to that and trying to get that together. I'll send information out about that. So, it is Friday, and when I come back from the break on this Friday, on this TGI Friday, we'll look at the arrow, and we'll read the narrative that they always have in the front of the page, in front of the newsletter, with the byline of Babu, which is Babu. His grandfather in African. That's what my grandsons call me and other children call me, Babu. Babu Oshi. And other people call me Baba. Father, teacher, Baba. When you get old, there's a great titles. But to me, what's most important that you live those titles. That you exemplify. That's just like elders. You know, I still ask elders for permission to speak if I see, and not just somebody who's a contemporary, but somebody who I recognize, even though they may be a contemporary, but because of their because of their involvement and commitment to our people, I classify them as esteemed elders. Because being an elder, I mean, just, you know, somebody argue, just you got old, you old. Well, not just that you turned old, because a lot of people just did nothing while they were young or middle age, and they definitely ain't going to do nothing now that they old. But we're talking about elders in our community. That means those individuals have done something positive, done something good. We have a caller, 267. Good morning, caller. It's still morning.
Hey, good Friday to you, Brother Oshie. Brother Ralph, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Ralph, how are you, man? How you been?
I can't complain, Brother Oshie. Working to get where you're at. I'm trying to trying to get these next 2 years in so I can finally stop going to the plantation.
I know that's
you
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that's where I'm trying to get to.
Yep. And so Brother
Oshie, I heard you say you're going to bring in a panel of sisters.
Yes, this Monday.
Okay, that's good, Brother Oshie, because they do have a lot to offer. My wife has turned me on to a YouTube network of them called the Fly Newbie in Queens. And some of these sisters got law degrees, criminal justice. Man, they're saying the same things that I've always been advocating, but I'm glad that their message is being received by so many such that how can you expect laws to change under a lawless people? You know, they can put the laws on the book, but those laws, they don't have to enforce them because they don't even abide by them themselves.
Exactly. They don't.
You know, I see all the hype regarding Stacey Abrams and this guy Gillum.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a joke. It's a joke. I'm not trying to discourage anybody to go out there, but you got to find out who's paying these people
exactly
to run.
Well, let me
and
say,
then once you then you'll find out where their real agenda's at. Because,
well, let me say this. Let me say this because I don't know about Gillum in Florida, and I do know vaguely about what's his name in Maryland, Ben Jealous, who was the president of the NAACP. He's running for governor. Haven't heard too much about that one, though. But the sister here in Georgia, there are some of us who are not going to vote for her. Because while she was in office, she was not a friend for us. She catered more to the LGBT and Caucasians. There was legislation, stuff that came across that she needed, that she should have supported, but did not, you know? So there are some of us who are not going to vote for her, you know. But also, too, just like you said, a lot of money, a lot of Caucasian money is on her. A lot of money.
Right.
You know.
And that's all you got to find out. Like, you see what she did before. So, you know, that's like electing Barack Obama or Michelle again.
Exactly.
I mean, these people are going to do absolutely nothing. But we just keep – that's insanity, brother.
That's right.
And it's insane. We keep repeating the same stupid mistakes, expecting the results to be different.
That's right.
Me and Brother Elliot was talking this morning about one of these clowns here locally in Philadelphia, Vanessa Brown. I mean, she just got jailed for corruption charges for taking a $4,000 under the table, thing from a political plant. Mm. Now, the thing about it, Elliot has no sympathy for her. I mean, when Elliot tried to bring the black farmers in, the woman was right around election time, we're going to bring the black farmers in.
Mm-hmm.
So they brought them in. So when it came time to really, like, bring them in and let them do some business, Elliot said, like, well, that was her whole platform around election time to, I'm going to be working with the black farmers. But Elliot couldn't get her or any of her office on the line. They absolutely stopped taking his calls and brought in Amish people. So, you know, but she's going to prison and wants somebody to feel sorry for her. See, these are the clowns that I keep telling people, you know, a politician is he's no more better than an overseer. That's all he is.
Yeah.
He's paid to keep an eye on you. He's not there to help you out in any old kind of way. You know, so, you know, but these sisters, man, I wish you would reach out to them.
Yeah.
I think I sent you their email.
If you didn't, send it to me again, but it's the Fly Nubian Queens, huh?
Fly Nubian Queens. It's a couple of them, Sister Michi X. Mm-hmm. She's a little foul mouth, you know what I mean? But, she's got a right to be angry. And
And
for those people that don't like mulattoes, she's a mulatto.
Okay.
But let me tell you, she trashes that father of hers and that family and tells you that these races will sleep with a black woman in a second and hate them. You know what I mean?
Right.
She has one lecture out there, man, where she just goes in on her father and his family and says she has nothing to do with them.
Well,
these is one of those mulattoes that, you know, people got a problem with, man.
Right.
I don't.
Let me say this, Brother Ralph, because, you know, my father, who I never knew, but I have a picture of him, he looked like a Caucasian. He was a entertainer. He was a ventriloquist, and he had a black dummy. He was out of Chicago, and he would come to Milwaukee, you know, on that circuit, more than likely, and hooked up with my mama, and as a result, I came out. So, you know, but I don't hate him, but let me say this. I hate, just like Malcolm said, the racist Caucasian blood that flows through my veins, because of how we're been made to feel about ourselves. And so I'm as African as any African out there. Although when I did go, Ralph, when I went to Ghana one time, they said, "No, man, you are Bruni." What's that? You are white. You ain't no damn Bruni. But, you know.
Right, I got you.
You knew, yeah. Because to me, it is more about consciousness and love of self than anything else. You know, because we're not black, we're African, but we span the spectrum of light, bright, and damn near white to blue black. We span the spectrum. In fact, out of us comes others. Out of us. And no, right. and none of those others can produce us. We're the only ones that can produce ourselves and everything and everybody else. That's why it says you should honor your father and mother, for your days will be long. And that's why the days for these crackers is going to be short. They're going to fight to the end.
I hear you, brother. You know? But I just had to call in, man. Okay. Look, enjoy the program. Enjoy the dialogue always, man.
Always.
And, you know, the thing is, I put my focus on our people.
Yeah.
Because why do we keep falling for the okey-doke over and over? Stacey Abrams, man, screw a Stacey Abrams. You know what I mean? Screw a Gillum.
But see,
you know what I mean?
Ralph.
As far as Trump, like you said, Brother Oshie, if he doesn't awaken some of these people up, then what the hell? What else?
Because we're delusional. We're delusional. Yeah. We want to believe that there is some inclusion in this illusion. And we're striving hard to make that happen as opposed to dealing with the reality of it is, which is the fact that we are hated in this society and will always be by these crackers that run it. And we will never have any equal access. Never. So, yeah, I agree with you, Ralph. Yeah.
Yes, sir. All right, Brother Oshie. Well, I'm going to continue listening.
Please do.
Tune in, man.
Oh, hey, so, man. Hey,
yes,
you
sir.
Know what? I appreciate you, man. In fact, let me say this. Me and Kwaku are talking about going to D.C. To that conference that Anthony Broder is having in D.C. and then driving up to Philadelphia to kick it with you and Brother Richard and Brother Elliot and so forth, man, for a day or two, man. We're talking about doing it. So if that happens, you'll hear it on this program, okay?
All right, I appreciate it, Brother Oshie.
Oh, you know.
All right, man.
Peace,
Ralph. Take care.
All right.
Peace.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back from that break, we're going to get more off into what we're discussing, and that could be what you want to talk about or what I'm talking about. So stay right here with us. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. Stay right here with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You're listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. Other programs on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. Let's Buy Black right after that from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. Then on Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Wednesday. And then on Friday, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard at 8 p.m. And then on Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then on Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We have a caller, 646. Caller, 646.
Hotep, Brother Oshie, what's happening?
Hotep, Brother Jay, how are you today, man?
I'm excellent, brother. Listen, I heard you and that great Brother Rao speaking earlier about Sister Carpet Muncher, Yerugal-loving Stacey Abrams, Adams, or whatever that
Stacey Abrams
licky name is. You know, I was not surprised when you said that she did everything she could for the Yerugal and her former gay mafia members. You know what I mean? The bottom line is, she is nothing more than a plant of the Yerugal.
Oh, no doubt.
She's accepted by the Yerugal. She's bought and paid for by the Yerugal. And sadly to say, our dumb Negro brethren just go along and buck dance along
sure.
with.
We're so happy. We're,
why
you know,
is it?
Jay, we're so damn happy the fact that somebody is going to occupy the state house, the city hall. You know, yet there's no substantive change in the lives of African people anywhere in this damn country.
Yep.
But yet we have more dark faces in high places, but yet our condition is worse off. And then we have some of those Negroes. Some of those Negroes have been, Jay, some of those Negroes have been in there 20, 30, 40 damn years and ain't done a damn thing.
Well,
but
I
made
one
themselves
in my community,
rich.
Charlie Ringel.
Right.
He was in office for over 40
yes.
years, and he ain't do nothing but decimate Harlem to the point that the only thing that saved it from total gentrification is the housing project. If they didn't have housing projects all over Harlem, Harlem would be totally gentrified by now.
Wow.
There would only be a 1% or 2% Negro population in Harlem, and that would be only Negroes that got money.
You know, I remember when Clinton opened up his office, and you know, if you listen to this program, Jay, and I know that you do, and I thank you, Jay, for listening and contributing. I really appreciate you. But if you listen to this program, you know I hate the Clintons with a passion. I hate them. And
this
ain't no recent stuff. I've hated them from Jump Street. From Jump Street. I hated the fact that Toni Morrison said that he's the first black president because he was on Arsenio Hall show with sunshades on and playing the saxophone. I hated the fact that many of our people embraced him and then what he did to us and what he continues to do, what he did in Haiti. I hate them with a passion. But he bought his first office is in Harlem. And I guess, is that how Clinton became a senator from New York? Because to me, she should have took her ass back to Arkansas.
No. His first house wasn't in Harlem. His first office outside of the White House was in Harlem.
Okay.
His political office was in Harlem. They bought a house up in Chappaqua, which I think they still live at, that allowed her to run for Senate and become the Senate. But you know, the thing is this, Brother Oshi. People like Stacey Abrams are really true enemies of African people. But we don't want to admit or to deal with the fact that they are enemies of African people, because everything that they do is for the benefit of the Yoruba or that Master Negro Peen. And you know that Master Negro Peen don't give a damn about black folks, everyday black folks.
And you're right. They never have, and they never will.
So the thing is, I'm going to make a prediction, and maybe I'm right, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't think she wins.
You know what, Jay? I don't think she wins either. It's too close to call.
The white man is...
No. Check this out. You have to get 51%. And because right. there is a libertarian candidate, because I haven't listened to one damn debate. I don't care to. But they were talking about it on the on a radio show here. They were talking about it. And what they said was that, you know, the libertarian candidate was on stage and he didn't lend nothing to the debate. It should have just been him and her. But even at that, they said that libertarian candidate is going to pull at least about 10% of the vote in this upcoming election, in this midterm election. If that is truly the case and no one gets 50%, there'll have to be a runoff between the two of them. And which, of course, I'm a hate, Jay, because I hate these damn political commercials. I hate them. You know, I hate the lies. Man, I hate the deceit.
She's a fraud, man. She's a fraud. And I don't think people understand the type of fraud that she really is. And you know something, Brother Oshi? You made an analogy in regards to what she's already done while being in office. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You said that she didn't really do anything for our people.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, we don't like to hear things like that with the truth of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, the bottom line is, when it's all said and done, it's going to be up to the voters.
Exactly.
I mean, here it is. You got a Negro like Oprah Winfrey. You got the president. You got all of these individuals coming out there campaigning for. And I think she done even had a few Yorugas coming campaign for also.
Yeah.
But the question becomes, what happens if she does become the governor? What is she going to do for black folks? Is she going to be another Negro like John Lewis? Is she going to be another Negro like Andrew Young was? Or is she going to try and act a little bit like Mamie Jackson?
Huh. It remains to be seen.
You understand what I'm saying?
No doubt.
A little bit like Mamie Jackson.
Yeah.
Because, listen, let's be honest about something. The reality is, in the political spectrum of black people, is that they need to give the Negro a little something. The point of the matter is they don't give the Negro nothing. Now, Mamie Jackson became great because he made certain demands and he gave the Negro
exactly.
a little something.
Exactly, no doubt.
But here it is now, when the Negro gets in the office, they don't give the Negro nothing. So the bottom line is, what are you really getting for your vote? Because you haven't done anything to make it to where as they're going to give you something. So here it is. This Negress gets into office, and if she doesn't give you nothing, what the hell are you going to do? Do another Barack Obama move when it comes re-election time? So the bottom line, in all honesty, is all a Negro can do is hope and pray that they get a little something.
Right.
Knowing the fact that you ain't going to get
nothing.
And that's a damn shame. Got to give the people what they want.
That's right.
Negroes don't want nothing. Negroes don't ask for nothing. Negroes just away freely. So where it is, you just being a prostitute.
Yep.
That's all. I mean, the bottom line is, if she don't get into office, you think she gonna stop there? You don't think they're gonna reward her? You don't think that she'll be back 4 years later doing it? She just gonna improve and work hard on it.
Yeah.
Because this is what she wants, and she got to pay people off. You understand what I'm saying? It's just like this Negro down there in Florida.
Right.
I don't think he's gonna get elected, because the bottom line is, it all boils down to one thing. Whiteness. Whiteness. White people are going to do what they feel is the best interest of whiteness.
There it is.
They're not going to vote for that Negro.
No.
Even though that Negro may be talking some things that may be good for them. And if they do vote for his black behind, and he do get in office, he's going to make sure he do everything in his power to take care of them so that they could do what? Vote for him again, because
right.
he got the Negro lock, stock, and barrel tied up. The Negro ain't never going to turn against him while he's in office. All they going to do is talk sugar, honey, iced tea.
That's
about
right.
him. After he get out of office, they give your black behind up for you, a.k.a. Puff the Magic Negro Obama. You got people talking bad about that Negro now, but when he was in office, what did they do? Oh, we can't talk bad about the brother because the white man has to. The white man is doing everything they can to stop him from moving forward. Blah, 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 blah. And in the end, what did your black behind get?
That's right. Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing. Nothing.
You'll get nothing.
That's why I'm
saying. Hey, AJ, their mindset is to us, you'll get nothing and like it. In fact, we'll give you so much nothing, you'll be begging for more nothing. That's how much nothing you're going
to
get.
Look, Oshie, I'm sorry to say, I love my people more than anything in the world. But the Negro is insane. And he's politically stupid. Because he never comes together, puts his vote in a box, and ask the person that wants the vote to pay for the box.
Yeah.
They just give them the damn box as a gift.
Yeah.
And that's why we lose constantly. But every time you turn around, somebody coming to you for your vote, or you got these Negro peas on radio or television telling you you got a vote. Like, the vote has really done something for your black bond.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. It's just like, I saw a nice little post on Facebook the other day. The sister was talking about the census and us being counted and all of that. So now the next big thing is going to be the census. But the government already know, like she said, who you are.
Exactly.
Because of what? Your Social Security.
Exactly. They
so
got
why,
you.
So why are they really doing the census? Other than to marginalize you, other than to categorize you, other than to put you in a certain place, a certain box, to be able to keep track of where your black behind is, so in case they got to do it, El Psycho is talking about shooting people who's throwing rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Now just listen to the logic in a cracker talking about rocks hitting you in the face is very hurtful and harmful, and they should be shot for throwing the rock.
Mm.
What kind of sick bastard is that?
Exactly. Exactly.
What kind of sick bastard is that?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing the fact that most of those individuals got shields on, or they have shields.
Right.
Not
only are they armed, they have armament on. And somebody throwing a damn pebble at him don't mean, but yet they're saying, if you throw a rock, I'm gonna shoot a bullet.
That just goes to show you the craziness.
Mm-hmm.
It goes to show you the blatant craziness of that you rule. Tajibuku is insane, man.
It is. He is.
Tajibuku there is insane. I mean, but you know what he shows us? The sickness of America and the sickness of the Yorugu, because they stand totally beyond him. They go along with his madness. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm, they have no issues with it. They support it. They do whatever it takes to make his madness seem real. The man is a habitual liar. I mean, the man couldn't even tell the truth if the truth smacked him smack dab in the mouth. And it's crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like it's nothing. How could you be a sane society under that type of
rulership? No, you can't be.
And like you were saying earlier about this guy in Brazil, believe me, he's going to show his behind now that he's elected.
Oh, man.
Oh, he's gonna do some serious, serious damage over in Brazil.
Oh, no doubt. I mean...
Because he got serious hatred.
Yeah, he does. And what he's advocating was pretty much what Trump advocated in terms of, he's sending these troops to the border now. The people who are marching... They won't get to the border until next week around this time, because they're marching on foot, of course, roughly about 25 to 30 miles a day. They're hundreds of miles from the border. And what they're seeking is, like any other human, is asylum for what they have experienced back to where they came from, whatever that might be, you know. But yet Trump wants to intimidate and scare these people. But even more importantly, If they're not intimidated, if not scared, and they start something, he wants to kill them. Just like Bolsonaro in Brazil. Because Brazil already kills 6,500 on an average yearly. Yearly.
Yep.
And the only place that's even worse than that is the Philippines. And they have a dictator. And this dude is a dictator. And Trump is a dictator.
Let me tell you something, Oshi. Listen to me very clearly in what I'm about to say to you. If Trump started killing those individuals trying to get into this country, there won't be no damn outcry in this country. It will be seen as nothing but business as usual. Listen to what I'm saying to you. It will be seen as nothing more than business as usual. There won't be any sort of outcry whatsoever. That's scary if you look at it.
Yeah.
And think about it. I mean, real talk. Real talk. That's scary.
Yeah.
Because that would set a precedent that we honestly haven't seen for, let's say, over 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen that in over 50 years when they did their thing at Kent State and the riots and things of that nature. Let's go back and just visualize that for a second and think that's what's coming our way with this bastard in office. Because I can guarantee you that if someone starts throwing rocks, there's going to be a white boy that's going to set it off.
Yeah.
There's going to be a white boy that's going to set it off. And when it's all said and done, it's going to be justified.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine what would be the world's outcry if it happened. But what would be the outcry in America if it does happen? There would be no outcry. There would be just the regular nonsense of CNBC and the rest of these BS news stations talking their usual junk.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have the Fox News trying to justify it.
Exactly.
But just the whole reality is that, in all honesty, there's a 75% chance that it could happen, OG.
Oh, no doubt. And the other thing, though, Jay, is that once it happens, it will be forgotten almost right after it happened.
Quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'll be forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, my brother.
And we don't realize it.
Exactly.
Well, listen, brother, you have a beautiful weekend.
I can't wait
for Monday's show.
That's right, me either.
I think the sisters are going to knock it out the box.
I believe
like
so.
They
believe me,
do.
Like they always
and it's
do.
Just going to be a beautiful thing.
You bet. You bet it is. All right, Jay.
Thanks
a lot,
brother.
Man.
Peace.
Hotel. We have another caller. We got 404.
404.
Hey,
man, Ochi,
it
how you doing?
West.
Ochi.
It is Weather.
It is West. Yes, sir, man. I don't call that often, man, but I want to talk to Brother Elliot, man. If he listening, man, he don't never take my call when I call in, man. Come on, Brother Elliot.
Brother Elliot screening your calls, West. He don't want you to be on.
Something, man. I've been on hold since last year, damn, man. Since McKinnon was on there, man. Damn, Elliot. Man, that ain't cool right there, man.
Well,
you know
hey,
saying, man?
Call him tonight. I'm not sure what the program is tonight. I haven't seen anything about what tonight's program is going to be, but give him a call, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. He always keep me on hold. He's like, I'm just listening now, man. I guess because I'm down south. I don't sound like I'm from New York, man. You know
what
I
mean? That what it is? He discriminates us Southerners. Well, I'm not a Southerner, but I am in the South. I'm in Atlanta, but, you know.
you in the South, man. Now, let me talk about this election coming on, man.
Okay.
You know what I mean? We got a choice between the Ku Klux Klan and the LGBT, whatever you call that, man.
Yeah, LGBT.
And so,
yeah.
My man, I got to go with the sister. I hate to do it, man, but
No, that's understandable. That's understandable. Yes, I mean, if I had to vote,
you know,
you don't really have to vote. And I surely don't like people saying, well, if you didn't vote, then you voted for the adversary. No. Hell, I didn't vote, point blank. And whatever votes the other people get is what they get. You know, not because I didn't vote. I voted for somebody else. No, I didn't vote because, number one, I didn't find anybody who I really felt voting for. I have never, and I said this on this program, and I'll say it again, I have never voted for a Caucasian in my life, and I'm not about to do that. I don't give a damn who he or she is and what they're talking about. Because if they're not talking about dismantling this system, if they're not talking about approving and providing some equity and some real inclusion for African people and respecting our human rights, then I ain't going to vote for them. Because, I mean, there's not going to be a Caucasian, not even the dude in Texas who's challenging Ted Cruz. Mm-hmm. Not even him, Beto O'Rourke. Now he's caused a lot of attention because of what he's talking about and the fact that he's challenging Ted Cruz, and so a lot of money has been poured into his campaign, and that race is very neck and neck because they want to get rid of Cruz. In fact, of course, all the ugly, mean, nasty things that Trump has said about Ted Cruz has been forgiven because they want to maintain that seat. So Trump is down there talking very good and very nice about Ted Cruz after all the things that he said. And, of course, Ted Cruz, wanting to keep his position, has acquiesced and kissed Trump's ass like a punk.
Yeah, like Cynthia McKinnon said, man, it's all a game, man. Okay, them folks on the same side, man. They both of them bought by the rich. But look at her. The main reason I vote is for my ancestors, man. I look at what my people have been through in Georgia, Kentucky. And plus, to get on jury duty, so I can let my people go.
Okay.
The states of Abram, man. My main emphasis is to get people over 18 records sealed and expunged. If nobody ain't done nothing in 10 years, particularly if you ain't did no sexual crime or murder, everybody's record should be sealed, man. After 10 years, I've been a model citizen, man. My stuff come from fighting the police down there in Fort Lauderdale. I ain't gonna tell no lie. Okay? That's what my main thing is, to get my record.
But that wasn't a felony, was it? That wasn't a felony, was it? It was a misdemeanor.
Yeah. No, sir. They came up on me, man, talking that bull crap about somebody say I'm driving records. I say, who is somebody? And they couldn't tell me that, so I told them they wasn't doo-doo, and their mom and dad ain't doo-doo. And so there they go, throwing to put their hands on me.
Yeah.
And so me, I know what I know. They tell me, I know something. Yeah, I know what y'all wasn't going to put your hands on me, so they got resisting arrest with violence. I'm protecting myself.
Right.
And so that record should be sealed. That happened in 1990 after Rodney King and all that, man. So that's what Gilly is going to do. He's going to seal my record.
Okay.
And Stacey going to seal my record for some BS I got up in here.
Okay.
That's the main thing, because the governor could do that, man.
Right, no doubt.
The governor can.
In fact, that's who you write to. If you have an issue, you need to be expunged or to be pardoned, that's who you got to go through, is the governor. Yeah.
That's right, man. So that's the main reason I'm putting her in there, and Gilliam too, man.
Okay.
Okay, that's the main reason. See, I got to play my hand with the hand I get, man.
I hear you.
That's what life is, man.
That's
right. You got to play what's in front of you.
Okay.
And do it logically. See, I don't do it emotion. My man, Homer the Clown up there in New York, now he done had two black governors, David Dinkins and that blind man Patterson.
Yeah.
Okay, when they was in office, they should have been trying to get something done.
Yeah.
See, I'm about solution, man. I ain't about sitting around whining, bro.
Okay.
That's just where I. That's
that
the way
right
I
on,
think.
Wes.
That's
you
where
solutions oriented. Right on, Wes. You solutions orientated. Right on.
Yes, sir, man. Hey. I study all these weapons they got. You know that, man. I'm about solution, bro. Cause we at war. Now, damn, I'm not gonna. You should look at that. That interview with Deborah Roberts had with Kemp last night. Did you see that on ABC?
Mm-mm, no, I didn't.
Oh, bro, man, you need to pull that out, man, and see how when Deborah Roberts asked Kemp questions. He got belligerent. He was going to put his hands on little Deborah Roberts, man. You know, she's real little black lady, man.
Is that the one, there's some young brothers and sisters behind him, and she stops him in his handler?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
I saw that, yeah. Talking about there ain't no such thing as voter suppression. It's a Democratic ploy. We have never engaged in voter suppression. Please.
Hey, O.C. O.C.
Yes, Jay.
O.C.
Yes, Jay.
Did your boy Wes just call me Homie the Clown?
That's who you sound like, man. That's who you sound like, bro. You got to put some bass in your voice, man. Put some bass in your voice, man.
Brother Wes.
Say homie don't play that, man. That's what you sound, man. I hate to tell you, bro.
Hey, Wes. You know something.
I love you.
You know something. I'm a master at the dozens. But, you know, I know that you down south. I know you in Atlanta, and you around all those Rocky boys, so your wrist may become a little broke at times.
Nah,
so I'm going to let you
like
slide.
That,
I'm going to let you slide with that, homie, you a clown. But you know better than that. Now, the reason why you made me mad from Elliot, Joe, is because when you talk, it sounds like you're goggling with nuts in your mouth. Nobody understands you. You are a simple-minded crackpot who talks about 501 hurts.
Okay, listen, both of y'all.
It's all sound, man.
Okay,
it's
let me.
Only the clown. Hey, Russ, you my
sound,
brother, though. I'm just joking
you
with
too,
you,
man.
Russ. You know what
it's
I mean?
Up,
you
bro.
My brother. But listen, Wes, I love playing the dozens. It was my pastime in school that kept me in the principal office because I was so good at it. And you know something? I never used one of the classic lines, your mama. It was no reason for it. I always was able to do it without using that classic line.
All right.
Listen,
yeah.
I want to know one thing from you.
Yeah.
Do you believe in the spaceship that Elijah Muhammad was talking about back in the day?
Well, that's a long story, bro. I don't believe in nothing, man, because in the middle of belief is a lie. All right? So when somebody say belief, they repeating what somebody else said. So I don't do belief. I go for what I know. So I'm still researching that, man.
So you researched if there is a spaceship that's going to come down and save us. You spending time doing that research. Let me ask you a question. When you do the research, what do you use? Do you use Google or do you use Yahoo? What is the tool of your research?
I use logic, man. Logic.
Well, listen, both of y'all.
Logic, A plus B equals C. I use logic.
A plus B equals C. I thought 1 + 1 equals 2. I didn't know that A plus B equals C.
Well, let me just say this for both of y'all.
A squared plus B squared equals C squared.
All right, hold on.
Hey, listen, I got to run.
Okay.
But, hey, Wes, thank you for the comment of being homie the clown. It's an honor and privilege when it comes from a good brother like you. Continue to do the research. Hotel,
Jay. All right, Wes, let me read this article here. Just if you want to hold on, just hold on, okay?
Yeah.
All right. The ARO, the Institute of the African World, the Organization for African Unity in San Antonio, Texas, puts this magazine out, this newsletter. I always advise that you subscribe to it. $25 a year, but it's chock full of just outstanding information, good articles, good information. The ARO, you can get the ARO. Yeah, you're right, Ralph, and that's what I was about to do, because that was ridiculous. Anyway, the newsletter is a monthly publication, and you can contact the ARO in San Antonio, Texas at 210-333-0118, 210-333-0118, or you can email them, which is obu@twc.com. So I'm not going to go through all the articles. I'm just going to go ahead with the narrative that is always on the front cover of the ARO, and that is education for assimilation or education for liberation. And that is the question that we truly need to ask ourselves. In fact, there was a time when I was with the National Black United Front, we had a convention, and the subject was, or the theme was, education for what? Education for what? One of the ever-pressing questions that must be answered as we about to be herded into the year 2019, bombarded with slick talk of multiculturalism and melting pot democracy, is education for assimilation or education for liberation? How do we answer this question will determine if we will continue to participate in our present demise or struggle for freedom, justice, and equality of opportunity. Our present educational experience provides us with skills and knowledge, but strips us of self-determination. While we are becoming experts in such fields as medicine, engineering, religion, etc., our love of self and self-respect as Africans is suppressed and perverted. In our mad, blind efforts to assimilate into this Caucasian, European Caucasian extremist, racist, and privileged culture, this racist society, the prerequisites to deny and reject anything that is African goes unnoticed, but not unfelt. When we are taught to read, write, and do math, it is saturated with Caucasian extremism's history, philosophy, and ideology. So while we are learning the skills, we are learning that Caucasians give everything civilizing to the world. At the same time, we are learning largely by an omission of our ancestors' contributions, along with few select pieces on our captivity, that Africans were inferior and justified to be captive. Initially, we feel whatever we have to go through is worth the trade-off to be a part of an affluent, progressive society like America. However, this process continued to groom, maintain, and direct us to the service of the Caucasians while holding us in a limbo state of marginal assimilation rather than assimilating us totally, for real. This situation is illusion, not the reality of shared power that we seek. The marginalization and assimilation created by the global Caucasian extremist racist privileged system becomes a very sophisticated form of human containment, giving the hope and feeling of upward mobility while holding us fixed, tread-like in a caste. In this caste, we are conditioned to be loyal and dedicated to using everything we have to learn to keep Caucasian extremism safe at the detriment of our own rise and our own self-respect. In the process of studying and learning skills and knowledge in computer sciences, aerospace, travel, economics, agriculture, etc., we are learning to think of Caucasians as being the strongest, most beautiful, knowledgeable people in the world. We are taught that the superior people on the planet are Caucasians. We learn that we must be accepted by Caucasians or all is lost. The assimilation education sets up against ourselves. We are willing to do anything for a chance to be Caucasian, or if not Caucasian, anything that is close, like light-skinned. We are taught in both covert and overt ways to adhere to the standard. If you're white, you're all right. If you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're brown, stick around. But if you're black, get back. Get back. So we give ourselves and our skills over to be exploited in hopes that we, above other people of color, will be accepted. The education we need, a liberating education, is confronted with the viciously attacked by marginalized assimilationists, our people. Those of us who have brought into the assimilation project have lost so much of ourselves that we feel threatened as though we are Caucasian by any minor change in the Caucasians in us as being inferior relationship. Teaching the true role that Africans have played in history could shatter the Caucasians' claim to be the builders of ancient Kemet, which is one of the major pillars of Caucasian extremism. That's right. You remember when Trump won and Richard Spence was on Fathead Roland Martin's program? No, we did that, you know, because that's their belief. And they know, once again, Dr. Sheikh Anjou Diop in 1974 proved beyond a shadow of a doubt who the ancient Kemetic people are. But yet, because of cognitive dissonance, the belief that Caucasians are superior, yet today, watch the A&E, watch Discovery Channel, watch PBS. If they show something about ancient Kemet, a dramatization or illustration, they're going to be looking Caucasian. But if they show somebody serving somebody, what they're going to be looking like? Exactly. Caucasian people point to Kemet as proof that they gave civilization to the world. In a liberating educational process, we can provide more information to show that it was Africans who gave civilization to the world. This research and study can be accomplished in a liberating education process. Such scholars as Dr. Sheikh Anjou Diop, Ivan Van Sertima, Dr. Leonard Jeffries can be freely studied and analyzed. You can go to YouTube. You don't want to read? You don't want to read? Go to YouTube then, and you can let the ancestors and contemporaries speak. In a liberating educational program, we would ask these questions. What are the needs of Africans at this point in history? How may we begin to address these needs and supply them? What kind of resources base will be required to support programs for change? What kinds of talent, skills, and abilities will be needed to bring Africans into the world community and the world markets as equal players? Who on the planet can we trust to help us help ourselves? Only us. These kinds of questions would refocus us in an African-centered position that could lead to the reconstruction of African civilization. Liberating education would usher in a dynamic African-centered enculturation program that would result in the resurrection, reestablishment, and inclusion of all African thought and practice. By finding and using the best of that which was lost, correcting and centering that which was distorted, and purging and including that which came out of our experiences here in the hells of North America, we can develop an ideology that would refine and strengthen Pan-Africanism. In assimilating education can only continuing to blot out the beauty, knowledge, and power of our Africanness and contain us in a service to a system that is incapable of sharing state power or creating a just society. It is not in them to do so. It is not in their DNA. We have been wasting our time. A liberating education can move us along the roads of freedom, justice, and equal opportunity. An assimilating education leads us to seek solutions to our conditions by submitting to the very ones who are causing our powerless position in the first place. A liberating education will provide us to step out on our abilities, cast down our bucket where we are, and out of that source, create a new world. The question is, will we be? The question is, what will be chosen? What will be chosen by us? Will it be education for assimilation, or will it be education for liberation? Brothers and sisters, to me, there is only one choice. There's only one choice. And I'm hoping that we understand there's only one choice. And that one choice is us as African people making the right choice. To saying to ourselves that this is what we must do. This is what we must do. There's only one choice. Either we're going to be Africans, or we're going to be niggas. Just being real. You know, either we're going to be who we must be, or we will, you know, suffer the consequences. That's going to be on us. That's going to be on us. I was looking for a piece that Baba Baruti had, you know, that he had presented. Sister Queen, we only got a couple of minutes. How are you doing today, Sister Queen?
Well, I'm alive and
well,
I'm okay.
That's great.
I'm well.
So you heard about the program on Monday. The program on Monday is Sisters Speak. We'll have a panel of sisters, and I hope you'll call in and lend your voice to the discussions that we're going to be having Monday. To Monday is Sisters Speak, you know, and looking forward
at
to
what
it.
Time? Yes.
Looking forward to
it.
At
what time,
it.
Please?
Yeah. So.
At what time?
Oh, the time. What time is the program? 11 to 1. 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, same time, same station, same program with me as host. But me ain't gonna be talking too much. I'm just gonna help make sure that everybody gets a chance to say this, that, or the other, you know, to speak their mind, you know, on various topics because you know sisters have a lot to say, you know, and on the eve of a possibility of quote sister becoming governor of the state of Georgia,
yes.
You know, what does that really mean? So we'll talk about that on a number of other subjects. So I hope that you're will be listening as you have been. I appreciate that and calling in. So
well, let me ask you this question:
sure.
Who did you identify? Who wrote the article you just read?
The one I just read. That's the Arrow. That's the Arrow. That's the Brothers and Sisters out of San Antonio, Texas. The organization that Brother Phil Johnson created many, many years ago that has literally become an institution for all that they do. And in fact, I met him at a National Black United Front convention in Houston. And if it wasn't for him bringing those brothers and sisters down to Houston, that conference would have been a flop, just keeping it real. And it was a pleasure and honor to meet him and the many young people that they had with them. You know, and at the dinner, they were dressed in beautiful African attire. And I mean, just a beautiful group. And the newsletter, I would suggest get the newsletter. I read to where you can get it. Only $25 a year. You know.
Yeah. Who is the author of that article?
Well,
did it say?
No. What happens is they've been using, even though he is an ancestor for almost 3 years.
Okay.
Almost 3 years. But what they do is they use his byline. They say it's him. They say Phil Johnson. But it's really the brothers and sisters at the Arrow, the newspaper for the Institute of the New World and the Organization for African Unity. They write it. They write it. You know, they were in attendance at the Abakasan Sumsum, the African spiritual warfare that Mama Marimba has. Each year in May, and they played a key role. this past year. You know, also too, they print the African World Newsletter that my Marimba put out.
That.
You have that? Yeah, that's them. They printed that. You know, and they do have a little contribution in there. So, but yeah, that's
printed out of Houston still?
No, this is in San Antonio, Texas.
San Antonio, okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so yeah, that was very, very powerful. It's what we've been saying for the past 20, 30 years. When are we going to stop talking about this Rugu and stop just talking to ourselves? Right. We just really got to address them.
I hear you. Well, listen, dear, I got to go. My time is up.
Okay.
You know, as always, I appreciate you. Have a blessed and wonderful weekend, Queen. Talk with you soon, okay?
Okay.
All right, dear. Peace.
Peace to you.
All right. Also, too, thanks, Wes. Peace to you, dear brother.
Yes, sir. Hey, right. One more thing, man.
Sure,
it's 400 sisters running for office in this country. Y'all know that. You know that, right?
I think there are 400 women. I don't think all of them are sisters, but I know a number of sisters are. Yeah.
I thought it was black women. Yeah. 400 black women. I think so.
No, but, not that. Okay, that's way too high. But there is a good number of them running because Ebony had... the number of sisters had like about 20 of them, 25, something like that. Yeah. All right,
that's
Wes.
Good, okay. Yeah, tell everybody, man, Jay, come on, move down here to Atlanta, man. All y'all is up north in the cold. Come on down here, man. We're going to make this south right.
All right,
I'll
brother.
I'll help y'all from down here anyway.
at least your family
you,
is. All right, you too.
I love the New Yorkers. It's rough talking to them, man, sometimes, but I love them all, man. All of our family.
Right on. All right, brother. Peace.
Peace and blessing, man.
Peace. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. But they are ours. Brothers and sisters, have a blessed and wonderful day and a great weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Abibi Fahodio means our victorious destiny. Abibi Fahodio.